Blog Talk Radio.
I got it that time. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is David Murphy, your host for the National Black Unity News Conference call. What you may want to call it, it's a lot of different types of call. We call it all kinds of things. But I'm going to tell you this. The National Black Unity News, ladies and gentlemen, is a powerful resource. And I strongly and I encourage you to take a just look at what you need. What you need to do is go to www.tnbun.com. That's the National Black Unity News in parentheses .com. And you go to our you can go to our page and you can look at some of the past issues and check it out. Read through some of them and you will see how powerful the information in this publication is. But at the same time, you will also find that you will get a lot of great information how you can participate or how you can get a subscription. And so with that being said, we get ready to start this broadcast. And before we get started, I would like to ask all the participants on the Zoom call to mute themselves, except for the speaker, because there's oftentimes background noise. Sometimes it may be real light to you, but it's heavy. We all can hear it. And so we would greatly appreciate it if you just mute yourself until you have your chance to speak. And I want to reintroduce a friend of mine, a business partner, a fellow soldier, Brother Satavi Jahi, who's been on the front line for a multitude of years, as long as I have, maybe longer. And he's always had something powerful and positive to say. And so with that being said, Brother Satavi, welcome to the broadcast, or the podcast.
All right. Good evening, David, and good evening to our listening audience that are tuning in on this live Zoom presentation, and also those that are tuning in on Blog Talk Radio. We want to thank the 48,000-plus people that have listened to us here on Blog Talk Radio, truly making this listener-supported radio, and we want to thank all of our listeners. As we do each and every week, we open this podcast up with a reading from Daily Motivations for African American Success by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who's also the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. Reading for the night, March 8th. I have to tell you to do everything. I wouldn't ask others to do for me what I wouldn't do for myself. Duell LaFont, corporate executive. Reading for the night. When you trust the inherent worthiness of your dreams, visions, and intuitions, you start down the path that leads to happiness and success. But there are times when you fail to trust, we fail to trust our worthiness. When we do so, we are told and blindly follow orders. Constantly, we live marginal lives. Ironically, some people have to be dragged, kicking and screaming to a better life. There's a story of a sentry standing day after day at the post with no apparent reason for his being there. One day, a passerby asked him why he was standing guard in this particular spot. "Don't know," the sentry replied. "I'm just following orders." Passerby then went to the captain of the guard and asked him why the sentry was posted in that location. "I don't know," the captain replied. "We're just following orders." That prompted the captain of the guard to ask the king. The king didn't know, but his curiosity was piqued. He summoned his wise men and asked them the question. The answer came back that 100 years before, an African prince planted a rose bush and ordered a sentry placed there to protect it. The rose bush had been died for 80 years, but the sentry still stood guard, waiting to be told to move. Each of us has a personal path that only we can follow. No one can travel this road but you. No one can force, drag, push, or command you to experience life's journey. You must take the initiative. It is only to the extent that we find the courage to walk our own path that we will be truly effective at peace with ourselves. I do not need to be pushed, pulled, or forced to experience my good. I will lead myself to success. And that is, you know, that's so true. You know, I mean, there's people that have to be
pushed or slapped, to be told, hey, why are you doing that? You need to stop doing that. You need to go ahead and you know, move in a direction that's gonna do better things for you. And you know, and the thing is, do they heed the call or do they just, you know, continue to do routine things that they used to doing but does not serve any, you know, purpose anymore? The rose bush, like they said, had died over 80 years ago, and the guard still was standing in that same spot to protect the rose bush that didn't exist no more. So, you know, we need to think about the rose bushes that we're protecting that don't exist no more, the things that do not lead us towards a better life. So that's what I got out of that reading, David, and hopefully, you know, our listeners can chime in on what they got out of it, or if they care to comment on that, or they can just go right into the, our speakers can just go right into their presentation for the night. Back to you,
okay,
sir.
Thank you, sir. You know, Brother Satari, you know, a lot of us has been standing guard, like you say, for some reason or not, the things that we guard may not have that same significance when you first set out to protect it. But there is one subject matter that we're going to discuss tonight is about, you know, because we are celebrating Women History Month, and they got, you know, just every month is something different. But for us, I'm talking about for me, and I can almost speak for a lot of Black men as well. There is one thing that we are extremely proud of is our women, because they have stood the test of time. They have stood up when we couldn't even stand up sometimes. They have done things with or without us to keep the family going and surviving. And, man, I could never, ever say enough about women, because I can't even imagine. It's something that is, like, some people may think a simple thing, like just raising a child. Glued to their hips sometimes. They got to do all these other things, you know, and we go out and do our eating. We come home and call it, that's it, you know. But they even the ones who have four, they have to come down and the baby jump right on that hip again. And they just, you know, it's a lot to run a household, to run a family, and to deal with us. And it takes a lot. And I just want to share my appreciation for our women is because they are, to me, if you look at anything on this earth, they are next to God himself, because they have all the attributes of them. And so, and I want to bring on, I see Earth is on board. Welcome, Earth. I see Cynthia Jahi is here. And if Beverly on the call, let me know, because I don't know the phone number. Shout out to me. And we also have a young lady by the name of, I think her name is Sharonda. I don't see her. Yes, Chandra Brown. And some of y'all got that background going, so please kind of mute yourself.
You are muted. You can mute or unmute yourself by pressing star six.
See if I can do it from my end. But in any case, speaking of this history month, Women's History Month, you know, I'm surrounded by strong, powerful women. And one of the soldiers I've been knowing for a long time, and I mean, she's been out there, here, there, and everywhere. I can never thank her enough for all the work that this young lady put in. And I'm speaking of Eartha Harris. Eartha, can you unmute yourself?
Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, Eartha, how you feeling?
You know, the spirit is strong, definitely strong.
Okay, I was trying to go in order, but things just jump off the hand for me, you know, so this is where I'm going to go. I'm going to let you, then I'm going to follow up with Cynthia Jahi, and then Chandra, and Beverly come on, and Fran come on. We'll go in that order. And so, but I just want you to take, I just want you to take a few minutes of introducing yourself to the world, and at the same time, why do you do them things that you do when you don't really have to? Why are you so invested in working with us?
Okay, let me see if I can bottle it down into a few minutes. What I like about it is when I listen to men, one of the things that I learned in life, no man can tell a story unless they got a woman somewhere involved, even if it starts off with mommy. And the reason why we're so strong, because like you said, there's no real story that people can tell without putting the woman in there. And the reason I know that I'm passionate is because my particular mother, she had 10 children. And it was remarkable as I got older and really understood, like you say, the things that people can do that seems incredible. It's almost like a miracle. And it starts with when you see how someone can take another life and try their best to make that person's life the best it could be. And not, like you said, dispelling the fathers, but usually those mothers is in a sacrificing position. So when I looked at my mother, I saw her raise 10 children. I see that all of us are successful, not to brag, but we all college educated. And I was like, wow. So then I thought about this. Life is about a continuation of people who came before you to be able to carry on legacies, to be able to say to yourself, this is my opportunity, not just with my mother, but with my grandmother and my great-great-grandmother and on and on and on. So some people that I never even knew, to be able to focus and utilize that as a way of me saying, I'm trying to show my appreciation for the life that I have by doing as many things as I can with my life that can impact people. So I feel blessed that I'm focused like that, and I do want to not just make a difference in my life, but make a difference in other people's lives, and also know that I have that ability to do that. So when I hooked up with like-minded people like you, Bill, Derek Chase, Charlie Duggars, Mama BB, and all of these other lights that just kept sparkling, then I knew that I was on the right path, because this is not a path, if you think about it, that you have to travel alone. You can identify who the weeds are. And when I understood that all I had to do is hook up with people of like minds, of people who had that light like I had, it made my job much easier, because you do need other resources and other people to help you do this hard work. And it is hard work, saving the lives and being influential in people's lives and seeing something come out of it. But when you're with a group of people who shares that same struggle, who shares that same vision, who shares that same mindset, you kind of wake up being blessed. So I feel blessed that you even called me today and included me among of the, like you said, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of women to call me today and say, hey, they're recognizing this month as Women Month, and I recognize, as I thought about it, a few of you guys that's off the top of my head that I would like to participate tonight in making sure that we, even though, like you said, it may be a few of us on this call, but we and took the time to make people understand how important that is, not just the few women that's on this call, but just how important women who have come before us, people who's present, and people who will lead. So thank you, Dave Murphy. And yes, we're strong women. And again, can no story in the world be told unless it has a woman in that story.
All right. Thank you. I hope you can hang around, because we're going to have an open discussion a little later on. And I would like for you to participate in that. But next we have another strong woman. Man, I'm going to tell you something about this lady. Cynthia, can you unmute yourself, please? And when I first met her and her husband, she's the wife of our brother Satavi Jaheed. She was working, helping young ladies with dance studio. I mean, they turned the house into a studio almost. But later on in life, as we got to interact with one another, they assist me in every issue with the with the Informer newspaper. They used to put a section inside of the publication, what they were doing with the center and how they was helping our children out. But one thing about Cynthia was this. She had that nurturing spirit. And not only did she have to raise her children, but guess what else? She raised a whole bunch of other people's children, mine included. And I want to thank her for that on this day, you know, because, and every day, because, and I've seen the type of dedication that she has had over the years, and it just makes me, I can't sit down, you know, I just can't sit down because too many people continue to stand up, even if they have to crawl sometimes, they continue to move forward. And Cynthia, I just want to share, I actually asked you a few questions, and especially about one particular area. With all of these children that you interacted with, it, why did you decide to go that route in your life when you could have chose so many others? Cynthia, can you hear me? Can you unmute yourself? Okay. All right, let me try to see if I can unmute it from my end. Okay, well, until Cynthia come back on, hopefully she'll come. I see her number still up here. So, you know.
I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now, there we go. I'm going to switch over on you. All right,
yeah.
Young lady, you got it. Did you hear my question first and foremost?
Could you repeat it?
Yeah, I repeated. I was just sharing a little information about the journey I had with you over the years. But like I said, I could never, there's never enough time to even explain that type of journey because all the work you have done. But I was always curious because I know it's a hard task dealing with children. And but you could have chosen a lot of things in life to routes to go on, but you chose to work with young people, young ladies and men and everything. Why did you choose that route? That's the question I really want to hear from you.
Okay, well, I want to say good evening, Jumbo, everybody.
Jumbo.
I'll answer your question in a second. If it's to be, it's up to God, you and me, everybody. Well, kind of piggybacking on what my husband said about walk your own path, I am inclined with what Eartha just got you saying. My mom, too, there were six of us, and my mom encouraged me to walk my own path. And that path introduced me to a lady named Maria Broom. You all remember her. She was on Channel 13, I think. And Maria Broom and John Taylor, when they worked with children, they worked with hundreds of children at one time. And not only children, but actually people of all ages. The youngest might have been five, all the way up to a lady, I think she was a burn victim, who was 75 years of age. And like Eartha said, it's not just, you know, me being the woman, it's all the women that I come in contact with. And as I was doing my own dance thing, dancing at a lot of different places, I began to realize how much I really liked bringing out the dancing children, bringing out whatever kind of talent that they had. And along the way, I discovered that some of their parents had no clue that they had this talent. Some of the children knew that they had the talent. Some of them didn't. It was more or less giving them something positive to see about themselves, whatever it was. So out of that, they did, you saw the play, they would do a theater part. They would do a dance. Some of them even created some of the work that you saw us do. And so I would put, you know, I would let them author that. But if they created a piece of choreography in the program, I would put that 10-year-old's name down. So it came from performing as a young child with my brothers, four brothers, and my sister Kim. We did little basic performances. You all know it, the 12 days of Christmas. Yachts come by, you do that performing. But that transitioned into me wanting to share what I loved with almost anybody that I came in contact with, but especially with children. So I hope that answers that question for you, David.
Okay, yes. And I hope that you can stick around because we're going to have open discussions. We're going to bring some of these brothers in to interact with you all. And so there ain't going to be no debate, but, you know, it's just going to be, you know, we let it go where it's going to go. But there's another young lady I want to quickly introduce her. Now, I never met her personally, but I spoke to her on the phone a couple of times. And her husband has interacted with us on a few of our podcasts. His name is Eric Brown, and which I knew his father. You know, we grew up together. But he informed me about his wife. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Chandra Brown. And Ms. Brown, can you unmute yourself while I'm speaking? And Chandra Brown, I talked to her, you know, a couple of times, and she came up with an idea that needs to be addressed, and I'm holding her book in my hand right now. and I hope you can see this, but if not, you know, I'll put it out there later for you. But Chandra wrote a book about how to navigate white privilege in the workplace. And that's an interesting title. And all of us know those who have had jobs, black, I mean, I don't care what, you know, if you worked around the mother folk, you know, there would be, some people may call it office politics, or, you know, we the first to get hard. I mean, the last to get hard and the first to get fired, all that kind of stuff. And when Cousin Joe need a job, we out the door and all this kind of stuff. And we as people been dealing with this subject matter for a lot of time. And especially us brothers, you know, we get on there, somebody say, hey, that's the wrong way. We ready to go to war with them. You know, then we out on the street again. But she wrote an interesting book, and I'm going to let Miss Brown speak about her book and why she wrote this book. And she wrote on my, going that way down, when she said, the black professional guides to how to navigate white privilege in the workplace. And so, Chandra, welcome to the call.
Thank you for having me.
And first thing I want to ask you, and I guess everybody else will know, why did you write this book?
Well, I'm a nurse practitioner, and I have been in my field for quite some time now. I'm going into my 24th year in this particular field, and I have seen people come and go. I've seen people rise and fall, and there were just some particular situations that always resonated with me as to why these things were happening. And something happened to me. It was kind of like a knee-jerk reaction for me to just take pen to paper and to kind of get some of those emotions out, but also to come up with a way for people to learn from not just my experiences, but the experiences of other people, because it's not a woe is me tale. It's not, oh, they did this to me, they did that to me. It is actually how we go into the workplace and kind of shoot ourselves in the foot. So me interviewing people, me sitting down and listening to their stories, it helped me formulate an outline. And because a lot of our experiences were so intersected, I was able to actually just formulate just chapters and chapters and chapters, and kind of like draw up a foundation as to how you can actually navigate white privilege.
Okay. And we're going to have a little discussion on this as well. And if you can you put your information in the chat box on how people can get your book?
Sure. Let's see here.
And I'll get right back to you. And Beverly, are you on the call? If you can, unmute yourself.
Hey.
Yes, I can hear you now.
Hi, David. Okay.
Well,
hi.
Let me
good evening.
Let me properly introduce you. Now, Beverly, I had met many years ago, like you, Cynthia, way back in the day. Even when I was doing my directory, she was around when I first got started. And I like to think of her as a pioneer, because she really is in my book. See, I have done research on black businesses for years, and I used to put them in a directory, so I had to put them in different categories. But Beverly was in a category always to her own all the time. There was nobody, maybe one person I think came aboard later that may have something similar. But she was there before the big boys was. Before all of these Office Depots and all of them type of people came on board. And she weathered a storm. And not only did she weather that storm, but she weathered many storms, and she's still standing tall today. And I have a great deal of respect for this young lady, because I know it's not easy out there. And dealing with the kind of people she had to deal with, it wasn't easy as well. And so, Beverly, I want you to introduce yourself again and tell us why you went into the field you did, because I didn't tell them what kind of field you was in pretty much, but you tell them why you chose that field and how you was able to withstand all these years.
Again, good evening, everybody. I am Beverly Williams, President and CEO of Sue Ann's Office Supply Incorporated of Baltimore, Maryland. And it's funny because I started out years and years ago. I was a probation officer, and then I started selling encyclopedias, then I sold real estate, then I sold securities. I had a girlfriend who worked kind of in the industry that I am in. Her name was Sue, and my name, middle name is Ann. So I always wanted to be my own, you know, I wanted to be in business for myself. I wanted to work for myself. And I always thought I was going to do a children's clothing store or something like that. Well, since she was in this business, kind of in the office supply business, she worked for a company that had a retail shop that sold balloons and printing and office supplies as well, and we were very close. I decided that when she lost her job, we came together and started Sue Ann's Art Class. So that's where the name came from. We were both from Cherry Hill. We grew up in Cherry Hill together. And, you know, I just saw a vision and ran with it. She left me the first year. I became incorporated in 1986. And we did establish before the Big Box came to Maryland. You know, we were here before they arrived. We sell everything from pens and pencils to paper to computer products, furniture as well. We do install if you need it. And I just continue to love what I do. I love serving people. I've always like to serve people, but I love serving people, and I love serving our people especially. This business is, as you can imagine, a very difficult business. When I started, there was one black gentleman in Baltimore. I can't remember the name of his company. He was doing very, very well, but he was not a good money manager, so he didn't last. You know, once I started, he didn't last very long after I began. So I'm one of the few women-owned black female-owned office supply companies in Maryland. There are a few others, but, you know, they're not in Baltimore City. They're on the outskirts of Maryland.
Okay. And so, you know, these are a few of the guests that I asked to come on to the show, and I appreciate each and every one for taking time out their extremely busy schedule to be with us this evening. And we're going to have a chat with them, but before we got some other strong sisters on here too. But before I bring them on, I'm going to ask some of my brothers who are on here, Mr. Vernon Dempsey, Bill Gooden. And I explained to you how I felt about our women, you know, the way I see them. Could you gentlemen express, I'm going to start with you, Mr. Walter Murphy.
Fantastic. First and foremost, you know, I believe my sister started off first with that prolific statement talking about no matter what kind of a man you are, you started out with a woman, you know, you came out of their womb. And that is a powerful, powerful statement. But not only that, the womb that I came out of nourished me, took very good care of me, and eight other folks too. Not to mention the fact that her mother's mother helped her and a whole lot of other folks too. I mean, in fact, she helped the whole community with almost no money. Now, how these women do what they do, I cannot explain it, but I can tell you that they've molded me, they've shaped me, and they've embraced me, and they've enhanced me. And so as a person, women are not to be downgraded and all that kind of stuff. They are to be celebrated and cherished. And on top of all of that, you see, not only do I have a mother and a grandmother, sisters that were awesome. I mean, just awesome as far as human beings are concerned and their contribution to life. And then, of course, my cousins and all those kind of folks. But then, ladies and gentlemen, I also got to tell you that there is something else that's really powerful about women. They claim that any powerful man, which I am, always have a strong, wonderful, powerful woman behind him. And I have that also. So when it comes down to Kathleen Murphy and all those other folks on this planet, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, I've got me one heck of a wonderful wife. It makes me one heck of a wonderful. Back to you, Dave.
Wow. That's why you my big brother. You're always teaching me something, bro. Man, but in any case, Bill Gooden, come on in, bro. You have to unmute yourself, sir.
First, let me just say good evening to everybody. And I appreciate this stand, Dempsey. You know what to say. But I just want to say, you know, basically, I mean, I agree that first of all, we want to acknowledge the women, you know, because, man, on the reality that none of us would be standing without women. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you know, I think you said, David, when we started off, I mean, we didn't have many struggles, but black men couldn't even stand up, but women had to stand up to carry the fight on. So I say thank you for that. And I'm going to just close with this because of time, but I appreciate y'all so much. And I will say this, because when you talk, David, in terms of women doing a job and carrying babies on their hip, to me, it's personal because I had to raise two sons. So I know the struggle that women go through. I mean, I've been on welfare. I had to take the children to hospitals and all that. So I appreciate y'all immensely. And, you know, no matter what we do, then we can't do it without one another. So I just want to say thank y'all so very much, and I love and appreciate y'all.
Okay, man, I tell you, I surround myself with some strong people. And so now, you know, on this podcast, we like to say we like to keep it real. And I know there has been some issues amongst ourselves because, you know, we brought up in a place in a country where the dominant or pro-to-be's the dominant, well, they have more people than we do. Now, they ain't dominant at all. They just have more people and they have control. But one thing they have already did, you know, with us, I don't care what level it was, to separate us from each other, men from each other, you know, put the houseman went to work, as butlers and had the one out in the field. And he gave one more credit than the other. And of course, when that happens, you know, some animosity takes place and then conflict. But then on the other side, there's even in my time, especially in my time, I remember that we had to be extremely quiet when some people knocked on your door. And they was what they call, I don't know what they call them back in there. We call them welfare. And then they used to have social, I don't know what terminology they had back in them days. I was a real little boy at the time. And you had to be extremely quiet because sometimes they would come past and they want to inspect your house and see how much you had. And I have heard of horror stories where men had to leave their homes because otherwise the women wouldn't get benefits to help them out with the children. Because let's face it, you know, even like my father, he had great education, but when on the workforce, they had him in the toilets and stuff sometimes. So you know, I love my father, but unfortunately, he let life get to him. And let them get to them. I did the same thing in my lifetime to let them get to me. And then he gave up on life. And then he left all of that work, all of that weight on my mother. 8 children. But mom stood up. She stayed firm. And she did what she had to do to keep, you know, to keep us going. And I had this discussion not too long ago. But to the ladies on the call this evening, you know, we need to have a little bit of clarity. No, we're not back in the 50s and 20s where a lot of those things, but they do exist in a lot of other areas as well. And most of the men on this call, I do know, they understand that with our women, I hope you know, we're not as a possession, but our women is a part of us. That's what I'm trying to say, is this. Without y'all, we would never make it. We never would have made it. And so, you know, and that's why I believe God put us, you know, with black men and black women together. That's one powerful force. And I do believe that we are the original people, you know, but still, there's so many devices out here that keeps us separated. For instance, they have given in certain instances more power to the women so that the black man would kept, you know, feel down. And most black men would tell you that. If they not the breadwinner, if they not pulling their weight, they feel less than a man. So they begin to do little crazy things out there. Even when it comes to hitting their mate sometimes, abusing their mate sometimes, because they feel less than. And so that old song, we always hurt the one we love, and it has a lot of significance to that. But to the ladies out there, dealing what you have to deal with, and it's even worse now in some cases. But like I say, but most of us, if you have the will, you can succeed, and even under these type of pressures. And that's why that young lady, Miss Brown, they wrote a type of book because, you know, because a lot of people actually made it, and as an example. But there's a lot of young people coming up behind us, and they don't know what to do. They don't know how to act because they are being, integrated or perpetrated or whatever that word is in their mindset. You know, because right now everybody with that, I got to get mine to bling. They got to get it now, quick, fast, and in a hurry. And if they don't have it, they just move on. And so any one of you ladies on the call can jump in on this question, is this. If you had a heartfelt conversation with a young lady who's going troubles with a man because he may not be pulling his weight, and you may have children in your life, and they just want to succeed, but they're frustrated, I don't know what, and I guess everybody's been there and done that before too as well. What type of advice would you give them when you consider a relationship like that, you know, a toxic relationship that's going? Do you give up on? Do you give out? Or do you move on? Or what suggestion would you give that person if they came to you with a situation like that? Anybody can jump. Just unmute yourself.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Dave?
Who's that?
This is Eartha Harris.
Yeah, I can hear you. You kind of like you in the background. But, yeah, go ahead. I can hear you.
Okay, because it's probably because I had called in somebody and then my phone doesn't act right. But again, this is basically the information that I give women and I give myself. There's no solid training for anything you do. It's very hard to be successful in it. But you can be successful because there also what you have is intuition and just natural senses, right? So we never really got back to creating manhood and womanhood training. So not only is our young people not having enough role models to figure out how they can have better relationships, the people that they're looking at, our age group, and even whatever age group you're looking at, there's not enough examples. So I think the fact that all of us, the men and the women, have not had training, the men and the women, we all have some type of trauma in our lives that we're trying to move as if we are well, and we're not moving as if we all, not just the young people that you're asking us to give advice to, but we all should be moving in a form of healing. So we have to be able to individually say to ourselves, How do I heal from my own trauma? How do you heal from your experiences, your exposure, or even what you wanted to get out of a relationship? So once you can find out how you personally can do that for yourself, that's what I think we can offer anybody, whether they're young or old, the healing process, because it's not no one thing you're going to be able to say to anybody that's really going to give them that whole relationship or that excellent relationship or that great relationship that they're looking for, because the foundation is not there for it. We can say to you, like you said, how do I deal with somebody that's in an abusive situation? I physically can tell you that I say to that person, hey, come to my house for a minute and cool off. Thing you can do is walk away. Anything that doesn't really help in your relationships, the first thing you should get in your mind, just walk away. Just walk away. And it could be just something like just a mild argument to a blown out argument to a point that you might feel like knocking up somebody's head. The best thing that all of us can do when we're not feeling that we're in a position a positive toward each other, walk away.
All right. Powerful information. And anyone else, you know, it ain't got to be what I ask you, but because sometimes you know best what's going on us. You know, you can look at we, and you can see where we have a lot of issues at. And Eartha hit on one of the things is foundational. You know, we don't have the rites of passage the way I think we should have. You know, when a boy get a certain age, he had to go through some certain things or something. And the same thing with young ladies. We used to have them things back in the day. I mean, they really did, you know, but now, you know, because I guess it was working, and so they got rid of that. But there's another young lady, and I know she got some advice on that because she is extremely nurturing herself, and she's one of the most giving person I've ever met in my life, and she does so many things for children like you, Cynthia Jahi. You know, she makes sure the children got school books. She makes sure that, you know, even older children, she would even tell them, you know, try to help them to go to school, you know, further your education. She know what I'm talking about, Kathleen Murphy. Look here, Kathleen, now you see you've been there and done that. And it ain't got to be on men and women relationship, but, you know, to women themselves, you know, if you had some advice you want to share with our sisters, our mothers, our daughters, what would you say to them with your experiences?
I would say, can you hear me all right?
Yes, ma'am.
I would say, love yourself first. You cannot move to loving anyone else until you love yourself. Loving yourself involves taking care of yourself, health, being healthy, getting educated, learning a skill, whatever that education level is for you. Doesn't have to be college, but getting a skill so you can be, as my mom would always say, self-supporting. Being able to feed yourself and your children. That's the number one priority, housing and feeding your children. And I would say that having children is a beautiful thing. When I was a teenager in school, in college, I had 7 children. But that didn't happen. That wasn't God's plan. He said, you're going to have 7 children, but you're not going to birth 7 children. And I will tell you, we had 1 son. We were in the military, and that 7 didn't happen. But I think that if I were to count them all and count up what I've done, I've come close. We've raised several kids. By the time I was about 36 years old, I was helping to raise other people's children full-time in our home here. I was in the military full-time, officer in the military, traveling all over the world, and still my husband and I raised those other children plus our son. Not only did we raise them, we got them off to college. After they were here in our home doing high school, we did those things, and extended family members. What we didn't do, we were in the Bible of our church. I think church is a key part of the component, not the word church, but a spiritual relationship with God, teaching your children about having a relationship with God, because in that comes strength in knowing the word, knowing what to do when things go down, things go up. You need some type of spiritual guidance. And I think that's key. That was key for me. So it would be a part of me to talk about the spiritual being if I were to talk to someone that needed that type of talking to. So I would say be strong. You'd be surprised what you can do. I never thought at age 36 I would have been able to do all of those things, but it happened. And with the help of my husband, I had a strong husband. I had a husband that understood me. I had to fly, and he allowed me to fly. And the way I flew was different than the way most people flew, and he allowed me to do that. That's about it.
Okay, fantastic. And Cynthia.
Yes.
Are you still with me?
Yes, I'm right with you all.
Now, I know you had a lot of tragedies in your life as well. And you seen the lift of what people will do when they're out of sorts, so to speak. Because love can even kill. You know, and people are in jail right now because of what they thought they was in love, and they went to drag measures. But, you know, like me, I have felt many types of pains and disappointments in life. But the key thing is, you know, Cynthia, what do you think the key thing is when pain strike you, disappointment strike you? And I'm asking you a question because I know you know this by experience. You had to deal with the Katrina, your daughter, your son-in-law, and then you had to deal with not only hitting Katrina, but went to North Carolina and the water hit you again, you know, and so you had a lot of rough, but one thing about you bounced back every time. So what kind of thing that you would suggest somebody, no matter what the situation is, how do you get back up? How did you get back up?
I would have to agree with both of those first two ladies. And I would say God. I had God in my life as a young child, and I wouldn't say that I understood that I was a born-again Christian or anything like that. It's just that I had a loving home that I came from, and then they introduced us to prayer and took us to church and things like that. And the thing of right and wrong, understanding that, being really clear about what is right and what is wrong, what's appropriate, but because of the love in my family, I always fell back on that love and also the rites of passage piece. But for me, I'm going to tell you, when I stood at the foot of the bed for my daughter, when we
the host would like you to unmute your microphone. You can press star 6 to unmute.
I stood there and I actually prayed to God. And I said the following to God.
You are
said,
unmuted.
God, you had my mother and father raise 6 children, up and down 2 flights of stairs with 6 children who had the mumps, measles, chickenpox, you name it. We had it fall. I was always falling down. And I said, please show me and tell me what to do. Now, with all the other ups and downs that we go through, it was kind of like what Eartha said. Like, I felt like if, let's say, my husband and I, we were going through all these different things together, it was always God. It was like, I always felt like I'm not but so strong. I don't have all the answers. And Sitalbi doesn't have all the answers. But if we could stick together, we can figure this thing out. And it would get crazy. It would get crazy sometime at the Culture Center. there were always ups and downs, but it's always been take a deep breath, pray again, and just take my time and just work through it. You know, just work through it with love. If you got to work through it with love. You can get mad. It doesn't mean you don't fuss along the way, but you just got to stop and say, you know, what's a more loving way to deal with this situation? My daughter, by the way, just to let you all know, recovered. She's still in a wheelchair, but hopefully one day she'll be on the program. She's Sunshine King, and she has her own modeling group. So what I gave her, I just encouraged her. When the doctors told her she wouldn't walk again, I keep telling her, you will walk again. She's not walking right now, but the potential is definitely there, everybody. It's definitely there. And she has. She's an author with Kim Coles in a book called Your Gifts. So I can tell you more about that in the future. But just keeping God in your life, being optimistic, and like Kathleen said, I'm kind of weird when it comes. That's all I would tell you. I'm really weird when it comes to being optimistic. I'm like crazy about being like positive, like over the roof with like, yeah, we can do it. We can make it. You can go. We can do it. And so that is what keeps me going. And the last thing is, I come from a real artsy family. So we have creative ways of doing things, and thinking outside the box has always worked for me. So that's my best answer.
Let this gentleman into. Barbara Sitalbi.
David?
Yes,
good, Kathleen. Yes.
Real quick, like, I didn't know anything about Cynthia other than just meeting her. And I just would like to say I've never seen her with nothing but a smile on her face. That's all I had to say.
Okay.
That's God, and, Kathleen.
Mr. Murphy, I see you trying to say something, but you muted.
I was just saying that Bill Gooden has a powerful question. So, you know, I'd like to hear before the session is over.
You said Bill Gooden had a powerful question? Bill.
Yeah, I had put it up there. But my question was twofold. And it was basic for all the women. In the business world, how do the women see themselves treated as it relates to men? I mean, the imbalance to it. And the second part was I was asking Beverly directly, in her business, do she think that she's been treated differently as a woman opposed to she was a man?
Okay, Beverly, you want to ask that before everybody else? You know, because that other question, the first question, I'm quite sure get a lot of response from that. But Beverly, you want to answer Bill's question?
And the question was, do I feel like I've been treated in the business world differently than a man?
Yes. If you was a man, do you think you've been treated differently?
Absolutely. I have, before this call today, I was thinking in my head about situations that I've been through in business where I remember a time when I was, I sell chairs to a vendor. So I learned from one of my salespersons that they were selling the chairs to one vendor, say 50% and 20, and they were selling them to me for 50% and 10. So, you know, there was an inequity there. So, you know, and that's the kind of thing that I've gone through. You know, I've actually literally had to take a state procurement officer to task for treating me improperly with doing business with me. And once I did that, we were friends. So, you know, I've gone through quite a bit, you know, being a woman in business. I even remember a time I actually won a state contract, but they didn't give it to me. So, you know, being not only a woman, but also being black and female. So there's been a lot of things that I've gone through as a female that I know I would not have gone through if I was a man.
All right, ladies, Bill asked a second question. We want to repeat that again, Bill, the first question.
Just in the business world in general, do you think that women have been treated different than men?
Miss Murphy, I think, you know, it always occurs because, like I said, I recently just saw a video of you when you were doing an interview. And you had to overcome a lot of situations, you know, like you was like, how would you say, in a man, James Brown would say the best, you in a man's world. And that military, because you spent a career in there. And how was it for you in there, even though, you know, did you have to face a lot of that?
Yes, I did, David. Believe it or not, my biggest problem was not that I was black, so it wasn't a racist. That it was there, but my biggest problem was that I was born female. And I promise you, for 20 years, from the beginning to the end, it never changed. My last assignment, I'm still going into the room, and I'm the only black usually and the only female. But I'm going to tell you something real quick. I was stationed in Honduras, so as you talk, this came up. I don't think about it often, but as I listen to all of you talk, this is what I thought back on. Something that happened to me when I was stationed in Honduras. I was in a very prestigious position. I was next in command. I was called the XO, the executive officer. And so we had what we call a change of our senior personnel, and we have a big formation. Well, the person that's called the XO is supposed to be in charge of that formation. You stand out there in front of the troops. You give the orders. Everything is done by that executive officer because the guy over you is getting ready to leave and a new person is coming in. Well, we had many practices for that formation, but my boss that was leaving, it's amazing. He was brown in color, but I don't know his exact nationality, but he was not Caucasian. He would not allow me to take the job and do my job and be the commander of the troops for that event. It was a big event. All types of personnel from all over the Honduran embassy was going to be there. It was big. He picked another guy with the same nationality as he had to do my job. Everybody saw that. It was so embarrassing, but I never said anything. I just kept on doing what I'm supposed to do. So one day, you know, we practiced a long time out for that. So one day I'm by myself and I'm going to the little shopette, and the big commander over all of us, he was coming out of the shopette and I was going in. So no one else was around us. So I guess he saw little Murphy for the first time in a long, you know, really there I am by myself. I saluted him. He saluted me and we spoke and we passed each other. All of a sudden, I heard him turn around and he called my name. And all he said to me was, "Why aren't you the commander of troops?" I could have cried right there. I was so embarrassed. I hadn't done anything wrong. And I said, "Sir, you need to talk to my boss." Well, let me tell you, the next day I was standing out there in the practice being the commander of the troops. And I have the picture. The next time I'm on, I'm going to show you that picture. You can see the mountains in the background. I didn't mess up. I had a lot of people that had to help. Mind you, they had practiced for that event for over 2 weeks. I had less than 2 or 3 days to prepare myself to get out there and do the job. But I did it. my boss did not want me to have that position. And by right, it was supposed to be automatically given to me. That's just one of millions of different things, examples that I could give you of what I had to deal with. And with that, the embarrassment, and you didn't do anything to really be embarrassed. You hadn't done it. I hadn't done anything wrong. But that's the life I lived in the military.
That's something, I'll tell you.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah, somebody trying to say something?
No, I just said that was awesome.
And I was going to say this, as far as a woman, one of the things that I guess maybe I never really looked at whether somebody did something because I was a woman, because I also was sympathetic to what people thought, like you said, about a man. So, for instance, you see a man raising a baby, feeding the baby, like Bill said, and then we look at them different, and we look at them like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Why are you staying home? Why are you, you know? So when I start realizing that it wasn't just women who are being targeted and we're expected to do certain things because we are women, I also recognize, again, because like I tell you, everybody is really getting the wrong type of training. Men was in the same position that we were as women. It was expectations of a particular person because they were a man, and they may have that, like you said, had certain jobs or provide for the family or play a different role if it was them dealing with the children. So as I move, and Bill and Murphy know this, there are some people may say, well, how you be a leader of the Million Man March? Wasn't the Million Man March about men and whatever, whatever? And I'm like, okay, I just told you. There can be no story without a woman. So I'm not doing this because I'm in leadership of an event that happened, or I'm a focus or structured enough that I can make people commemorate it or remember that it happened and we're doing certain things around it. It's just that, like you said, that's the skill that I got. I'm an organizer. I don't know. Maybe it could have been something else. But right now, my passion was I can feel like I can contribute to that there was a historical event that happened, and we're not talking about it, and we physically saw it with our own eyes, and people had me all the time reading books, like the lady wrote, of people that I never met. I never met Martin Luther King. I never met Malcolm X. I never met Jesus. I met Farrakhan. I met Ben Chavis. I met all these powerful people, and all I wanted to do was take that knowledge and say, why do we always have to celebrate when people die? Why can't we act as if this person who's alive and breathing right now, that we all are talking about this person and giving people accolades and reminding ourselves of all of the hard work and all of the things that went into making this event successful? Because many, many people worked to make the Million Man March successful. It wasn't just one, two, three, four, five things. It probably was millions of things that went into it. And 26 years later, we're not even talking about it. We act like it didn't even exist. I see other groups saying, oh, we're going to organize this. You're never going to have a bigger event in your lifetime that was bigger than the Million Man March when it comes to showing the image of a black man in a different light than it was shown previous before 1995. We had the images that these guys were locked up, incarcerated, bad dads, whatever, whatever. But that one particular day, of all the things that I've experienced in my life, and I'm 61 years old, was a miracle. So now I'm more focused that, yeah, but I think it's on both ends. I think women get short ends of the stick. Men are getting short ends of the stick because we are Europeanly trained, educated Europeanly. So we don't know really what positions a man or woman could or should be in. And then we don't create great positions based on the skills and the needs of what we're trying to accomplish and try to build our world or our success just around the fact that now we can use each one of those genders to accomplish our overall goal. Who cares? It could be a gay person. It don't even have to be a man or woman. It could be a gay person. It could be a trans. It could be anybody. Because the way that we were when we were first originally probably put on this earth
we were able to use our natural abilities and have ourselves in certain roles because that was the role that helped the survival at that particular time. Whether the women did stay and nurture the children when the men went out and caught the animals or whatever. But now we're in 2021, guys, and we got to look at ourselves. That Dave Murphy said, what is it that we can do as men and women to get back to some positivity, that we're not fighting against each other, we're not tugging at each other, we're not acting like, you know, this is a man's world or this is a woman's world, when we know this is a world of survival, this is a world of the fit, this is the world that we live in, and this is the world, which I'm so passionate about, that we are going to make a difference in it, and we are going to tell our stories. I wish I could write a book like that young lady, but like you said, we all should tell our stories, so when people are now reading about all of us, whether we dead or alive, they can see different images, and they will start to feel as though they can be whatever they want to be, whoever they want to be, because they'll see that many of us took that same road. We are now not just locked into this one role, one image. We can get along with each other. I love seeing women and men get along with each other, and it's about not about sex, and it's not about a relationship. It's just about a point that we as men and women, we can come together and we can make something happen. So that is the question of how we can move.
All right. Okay, we're going to shut this thing down, Arisa. But there's that young lady you spoke about, Chandra. You want to share some three more words and party?
First of all, Mr. Murphy, thank you for having me. I couldn't share my information for the book because only the host can share. So that's why I didn't put any information up.
You could have put it in the chat room, really. I was meant to say share, but in the chat room. But I tell you what, most of the people on this call, matter of fact, I believe they're all on this call. If they want your book, they just call me and I'll give them the information to you, okay?
Well, the one thing I did want to say is really quickly is I know that for myself, my daughter is also a nurse. And as far as men and women relationships, I think the most important thing that I tell young ladies that I speak to or that I minister to is that there doesn't have to be clear defined roles as to who's the breadwinner, who is the dominant person. Some people, some younger people, some middle-aged people I see, they work more parallel. There is no clear defined role. Whoever gets home first cooks. Whoever is off washes the clothes. Whoever has the time takes the kids to the doctors. So I think this younger generation is coming up. They realize that, number one, women of color are out-educating men. So therefore, you can't look at your partner or your mate to always be your breadwinner. Because I am in healthcare, I realize that people get sick. So traditional roles are going to change. They should be more fluid. And you should be prepared and live your life in order to accommodate those role changes. Even for myself, I mean, we've had some health issues as people. And I had to take over and I had to become the dominant person in the relationship as far as who was going out to work every day. But that doesn't mean that my husband wasn't working at home. My husband is very handy. So he renovated our kitchen. He renovated our bathroom. He upgraded our electricity. So I think that it's a responsibility not only for men, but for women to clearly define what it is that's expected out of life, period. And that's ultimately to be happy and also to live your life without judgment and not to care what other people have to say about what goes on in your household, because I've always been brought up to believe that what happens in your house stays in your house. My grandmother taught me that, and I'm quite sure all of you have taught your children that, and I've also taught my daughter that. My daughter being married, if she has issues with her husband, I make it very clear, I don't do married people. So your issues with your husband, I'm not that mother-in-law. I'm not going to ride for you. I'm not riding for him. I will listen, and that's it. And that's the same thing that my mother-in-law does for us. She doesn't come in between us. So I think that, you know, being older and wiser, we can pass those kind of just nuggets down to our children and to the next generation so that they'll understand that there doesn't have to be a dominant person. There can just be some fluidity and some congruency, and even at times being parallel. Because in order for me to write that book, my husband had to kind of like take a step back and let me do what I needed to do in order to get it done. So that's all I have to say.
Well, you said a lot, young lady. But
yeah,
let me say this to you, you know, to everybody on this call. Now, tomorrow night, you know, we're getting close to the end, map, but we passed, you know, what we usually set up. But tomorrow night, we're going to have a brother on. He had gotten sick in the Black History Month. But he's going to do that whole Frederick. Most of y'all know him. His name is Donald Dowridge. And he's going to do a great presentation on Frederick Douglass. And I would like each and every one of you to be on that call tomorrow, same time, 7:30. But next week, I want to take this conversation to another level, and with women in mind, you know, since we're dealing with this month. And I would like to invite all the women on this call back, because we have Dr. Wattis on here and a couple other women that we haven't heard from yet. But we were just, this is scumming the surface of it. But we got some work to do with each other. We got work to do with us as a family, and we got work to do with us as a community. And the only way we can do that, to how everything starts with a conversation. And so we're going to talk about a lot of issues. But ladies, we need your help, like as always. You know, we need your support on this. And because your issue, from my perspective, is our issue as well. We all in this together. We need each other. We are one. And that's the way God, I believe, created us to be one. And but, you know, you never know who's listening to what you're saying, especially in these type of formats. You never know who you're inspiring in these type of formats. So please come back, because those people that you may never even run across in a lifetime may take you away and not only save some of their lives, but make some of these ladies and men have a better quality of life as well. And so, you know, so we need to talk about it, but we need to be about it as well, of course. But I'm going to see you all next week at this type of podcast, and we hope to see you all tomorrow evening. And I want to thank each and every one of who participated in this call this evening, because your experiences, my experiences, our experiences is a powerful experience. I'm going to tell you that. It's powerful. And we can't keep this kind of experience within. We have to share, because, you know, information is power. We're full if you use it correctly. And so with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I bid you all a good night. Keep coming back. We got work to do. The National Black Unity News is going to be moving up and outward. And those who are not involved, get involved, because this is the place to be. I'm going to tell you, you'll never meet a greater group of people. I'm telling you, you know, you need to get them just for that reason alone. Because like we already said, everybody on there mentioned that there are going to be days. You remember the old song? Some of you real old school. Mama said there will be days like this.
Days like this.
We're going to have them even till this day. So, and so when we have these type of days, it is good to have somebody around you to uplift you, to hold your hand sometimes, to guide you through some of these rough spots sometimes. But you don't have to take these battles alone, because we also, as we get older, you know, stress can kill us. It can cause all kind of havoc on your body and on your spiritual mind and your mental. And we have all of these seasoned people around here lift you through that. And so I thank you, each and every one of you. God bless you all. Good night.
Good night. I want to thank my wife for being on the call tonight.
Thank you, good night. So, Ty, you won't eat now. My man.
See you, Vernon.
Goodbye.